And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today is March the 15th, the Ides of March. 74th day of the year. 291 days remain of the year is over with. You know, the Ides of March is the 74th day on the Roman calendar, which corresponds to March 15th, marked by several religious observances and as a deadline for settling debts in Rome. The holidays observances: Red Nose Day. It's not only about red noses, it's about making a difference by having fun. Join the laughter and support a great cause. National Shoe the World Day. World Contact Day. World Sleep Day. True Confession Day. Buzzards Day. National Brutus Day. Brutus was Caesar's best friend, also one of his assassins. National Napping Day. World Speech Day. Ides of March, as I've said. World Consumer Rights Day. National Science and Engineering Day. World Tourism Day. World Glaucoma Day. Brain Awareness Week. Universal Women's Week. Ramadan and Pulmonary Rehabilitation Week. Birth dates is Francis Conroy, Andrew Jackson, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. It's the Great Daffodil Appeal Month, National Reading Month, Veggie Month, National Sauce Month, National Peanut Month, National Colon Cancer Awareness Month, Epilepsy Awareness Month, Developmental Disability Awareness Month, Brain Tumor Awareness Month, National Women's History Month, National Nutrition Month. Well, ever had a day when your computer decides it's in charge? Okay. National Women's History Month, National Nutrition Month, National Hemophilia Awareness Month, National Social Work Month, National Small Press Month, Multiple Sclerosis Awareness Month, National Caffeine Awareness Month, National Umbrella Month, National Kidney Month, National Craft Month, International Ideas Month, National Credit Education Month, National Cheerleading Safety Month, Endometriosis Awareness Month, National Rising Star Month, National Music in Our Schools Month, Irish American History Month, and National Athletic Training Month. Well, all of that having been said, ...474 B.C., Roman consul Aulus Manlius Vulso celebrates an ovation for concluding the war against Vale and securing a 40 years truce. 44 B.C., the assassination of Julius Caesar takes place on the Ides of March. 493 A.D., Odoacer, first barbarian king of Italy after the fall of the Western Roman Empire, is slain by Theodoric the Great, king of the Ostrogoths, while the two kings were feasting together. 856, Michael III, Emperor of the Byzantine Empire, overthrows the regency of his mother, Empress Theodora, the wife of Theophilos, with the support of the Byzantine nobility. 897, Al-Hadi Ilah Ihaq Yawa enters Sada and founds the Zadi Emanite of Yemen. 933, after a 10-year truce, German King Henry the Fowler defeats a Hungarian army at the Battle of Riad near the Unstrut River. 1311, Battle of Haimos, the Catalan Company defeats Walter V, Count of Brienne, to take control of the Duchy of Athens, a crusader state in Greece. 1564, the Mughal Emperor Akbar abolishes the jizya tax on the non-Muslim subjects. 1672, King Charles III of England issues the Royal Declaration of Indulgence, granting limited religious freedom to all Christians. 1783, in an emotional speech in Newburgh, New York, George Washington asked his officers not to support the Newburgh conspiracy. The plea is successful and the threatened coup d'etat never takes place. Now, the Newburgh conspiracy, for those who are not familiar with it, was a failed threat by leaders of the Continental Army in March of 1783 at the end of the American Revolutionary War. The conspiracy may have been instigated by members in the Congress of the Confederation, which circulated an anonymous letter in the army camp at Newburgh, New York. Soldiers were unhappy they hadn't been paid for some time, and pensions that had been promised remained unfunded. But they had plenty of money to take care of the elected officials. Oh, yes, they did. Much the same as we see today. Screw the veterans. We're going to take care of the migrants and anybody else that comes down the pike. 1820, Maine is admitted as the 23rd U.S. state. 1823, sailor Benjamin Morrell erroneously reported the existence of the island of New South Greenland near Antarctica. 1848, a revolution breaks out in Hungary, and the Habsburg rulers are compelled to meet the demands of the Reform Party. 1874, France and Vietnam signed the Second Treaty of Saigon, which further recognizes the full sovereignty of France over Cochin China. 1875, Archbishop of New York, John McCloskey, is named the first cardinal in the United States. 1877, first ever official cricket test match is played. Australia versus England at the MCG Stadium in Melbourne, Australia. 1888, started the Anglo-Tibetan War of 1888. You don't hear much about that one. 1907, the first parliamentary elections of Finland at the time of the Grand Duchy of Finland are held. 1917, Tsar Nicholas II of Russia abdicates the Russian throne, ending the 304-year-old Romanov dynasty. 1918, Finnish Civil War, the Battle of Tampere begins. 1919, Ukrainian War of Independence, the Kontrazvedka is established as the counterintelligence division of the Revolutionary Insurgent Army of Ukraine. 1919, the American Legion is founded. 1921, Talat Pasha, former Grand Vizier of the Ottoman Empire and chief architect of the Armenian Genocide, is assassinated in Berlin by a 23-year-old Armenian, Soghoman Delirian. 1922, after Egypt gains nominal independence from the UK, Fuad I becomes king of Egypt. 1927, the first woman's boat race between the University of Oxford and University of Cambridge takes place in the Isis in Oxford. 1939, Germany occupies Czechoslovakia. Also in 1939, Carpatho-Ukraine declares itself an independent republic, but the next day it's annexed by Hungary. 1943, World War II, the Battle of Kharkiv. Germans retake the city of Kharkiv from the Soviet armies. 1951, Iranian oil industry is nationalized. 1961, at the 1961 Commonwealth Prime Minister's Conference, South Africa announces that it will withdraw from the Commonwealth when the South African Constitution of 1961 comes into effect. 1965, President Lyndon, I'm going to be King Johnson, responding to the Selma crisis, tells Congress we shall overcome while advocating the Voting Rights Act. 1974, 15 people are killed when Sterling Airways Flight 901, a Sud Aviation Caravelle, catches fire following a landing gear collapse at Mehrabad International Airport in Tehran, Iran. 1978, Somalia and Ethiopia signed a truce to end the Ethio-Somali War. 1986, collapse of Hotel New World. 33 people die when the Hotel New World Singapore collapses. When have you got your money back? 1990, Mikhail Gorbachev was elected the first president of the Soviet Union. 1991, Cold War, the Treaty of the on the Final Settlement with respect to Germany comes into effect, granting full sovereignty to the Federal Republic of Germany. 2008, stockpiles of obsolete ammunition explode in the next military ammunition depot in the village of Gerdek, Albania, killed 26 people. 2011, beginning of the Syrian Civil War. 2019, 51 people are killed at the Christchurch mosque shootings. For those that are not familiar with that, there were two consecutive mass shootings on two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand. It took place on March 15th, 2019. Committed by Brenton Tarrant, who entered both mosques during Friday prayer, firstly at the Al Noor Mosque at 1:40 p.m. and then at the Linwood Islamic Center at 1:52. He was arrested after his vehicle was rammed by a police unit as he was driving to a third mosque in Ashburton. He live-streamed the first shooting on Facebook, marking the first successfully live-streamed far-right terror attack, and published an online manifesto before the attack. March 26, 2020, pleaded guilty to 51 murders, 40 attempted murders, and engaging in a terroristic act. And in August, was sentenced to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. That's the first such sentence ever given in New Zealand. The attack was linked to an increase in white supremacy and alt-right extremism globally, observed since about 2015. Well, you know, the liberal left calls anything they don't like white supremacy. I mean, the Native American 9-year-old that they had a meltdown over, who painted his face team colors, it was called a white supremacist act, even though he was Native American. Accuracy is not something the liberal left pays that much attention to as long as they get their message out. Okay. 2019, beginning of the 2019 Hong Kong protest. Also in 2019, about 1.4 million young people in 133 countries go on strike to protest climate change, as if the planet's going to pay any attention. You know, climate change has been bandied about as being the cause of almost everything except acne. And there's nothing anybody can do about it. 2022, the 2022 Sri Lankan protest begins amid Sri Lankan economic collapse. We're coming up on hard times, folks, and our elected leaders are doing everything they can to make it worse. Bidenomics has been a disaster. Now, I don't know Biden. I've met Trump. We lived in Trump Tower for a couple of years. Very nice gentleman. I don't know what all the brouhaha is about. Let's just have an election, elect somebody, and move ahead. All the cheating and the carrying on accomplishes nothing. And in that same vein, let's talk about some strange crimes. Because whatever the mind can imagine, can be carried out. You know, in the court of law, when they're not too busy trying to surreptitiously give the victory to their friends, there are certain requirements in place regarding testimony, one of which is testimony has to come from humans. But just because a bird's testimony is not admissible in court doesn't mean it can't influence the outcome of a case. In this particular case, we're talking about a parrot named Lorenzo, owned by a Colombian drug cartel. 2010, police raided a suspected cartel hideout in the city of Barranquilla, Colombia. And their suspicions that it was a cartel hideout were confirmed when Lorenzo recognized their uniforms and started squawking, "Run, run, you're going to get caught." According to Officer Holman Oliveira, in an interview with reporters, the parrot was sending out alerts. He was what you might call a watchbird, as opposed to a dirty bird. Police arrested four men in the raid and seized a large quantity of drugs. And they took Lorenzo and two other lookout birds into custody to see if they could be coaxed into revealing anything else about the gang. According to Oliveira, parrots like to talk and we're good listeners. Colombian police estimate that as many as 2,000 parrots have been trained to act as lookouts for drug cartels. In addition to Lorenzo, we got Hercule, a parrot owned by Vijay and Neelam Sharma of India. 2014, Neelam Sharma was murdered by robbers who burglarized her home. And the police had very little evidence to go on, and they couldn't even identify a suspect. Well, the parrot was home at the time of the attack and saw the crime. And he provided the first clue about a week after the murder. When Vijay's nephew, Ashutosh Goswami, visited the house, Hera became visibly agitated. During discussions, whenever Ashutosh's name was mentioned, the parrot would have a meltdown, according to what Sharma told Time magazine. That raised my suspicions, and I told the police. And they brought Goswami in for questioning, and eventually he confessed. Only takes a New York City telephone book and a rubber hose, and you can get him to tell you anything. Police found a murder weapon and some of Neelam's jewelry in his possession. And then we got Max, an African gray parrot owned by Santa Rosa, California resident Jane Gill in the early 1990s. Like Hercule, Max apparently saw his owner being murdered in her home. 2 days actually passed before Gill's body was discovered. And when the body was discovered, Max was found in his cage nearby, hungry and dehydrated. Well, when he was nursed back to health, he started to screech, "Richard, no, no, no." Well, Gill's friend and former housemate was a man named Richard. Another evidence pointed to Gill's business partner, Gary Rass. The police arrested and charged him. At his murder trial, Rass' attorneys tried to have the testimony of Max the parrot introduce as evidence, but the judge refused to allow it. Very narrow-minded judges. When that trial ended in a mistrial in 1993, Rass was tried a second time. In March of 1994, he's found guilty. If you keep at it, you can get anybody you want to convicted. All you got to do is have a friendly judge, take them out to lunch, go to parties with them, which is the situation I'm facing here on another matter. Well, let's talk about, I guess you can call it a blooper. January 2004, an unknown man grabbed a bag out of a car stopped at a stoplight in Sydney, Australia. That car belonged to Bradley McDonald, the local snake catcher. Well, in the bag was a snake he had just caught. 4-foot-long, venomous, red-bellied black snake. When talking about the theft, he said it just might teach the guy a lesson. That's like during the garbage strike years ago in the town in which I was living at the time. people were breaking into cars. It was close to Christmas to steal Christmas presents. So people started wrapping up their garbage like Christmas presents and leaving them in the car with the windows low down. And when they came back, they'd always be gone. Quick and inexpensive way to get rid of your garbage. Well, let's talk about what happened to Willie King in 1996. Snatched a wallet from the coat of an old woman on a street in Greenwich Village, New York City. Well, the woman was 94-year-old Yolanda Gigante. And if that name doesn't mean anything to you, she was the mother of Vincent the Chin Gigante, head of the Genovese crime family, one of the country's most powerful criminal organizations. Even though J. Edgar Hoover insisted till his dying day the mafia doesn't exist. Well, King was caught a short time later, and as soon as he realized who he had mugged, he pled guilty to grand larceny. He wanted to be locked up for as long as he could be. Because Vincent was not amused at his mother being robbed. He got 3 years in prison. King's lawyer told the judge, my client admitted his guilt during this opportunity because he wants to put this incident behind him and he hopes the Gigante family well as well. Well, if you wrong a member of the mafia, they have long memories. Well, you know, one crime that's becoming more, let's say common, is carjacking. And it's terrifying. You're sitting in your car at a stoplight, suddenly a thug runs up to your window with a gun and demands you get out and give him the car. Not a lot of ways to prevent such a sudden, untimely, speedy crime. But in South Africa, where carjacking is an epidemic, an inventor did figure out a way to punish carjackers before they get away with it. Fire. Lots of fire. Charles Forey introduced a blaster to the South African car peripherals market in 1998. Cost 3,900 rand. That's about, in those days, $655. First sign of trouble, the driver activates the blaster from the steering column, and the blaster squirts flammable liquid from a holding tank in the trunk out of two nozzles under the driver's side door. And then it emits an electrical spark, which ignites the gas, and hopefully the carjacker. In Nashville, and I actually got there as this was ending, the very petite-looking young lady was in her car, stopped at a traffic light, guy ran up, jerked the door open, grabbed her by the hair, jerked her out of the car, and she proceeded to beat the ever-living bejesus out of the guy. She was a professional wrestler and was in town for some matches. He tried to have her sued for assault, which was kind of silly. She was amazing. Nobody would have thought that that little girl could beat the crap out of a guy twice her size, but she did. Well, let's talk about rich kids getting up to no good. In 1924, the body of a boy was found nude and drowned in a culvert in Wolf Lake, Indiana. He'd been hit on the head and suffocated. Police identified the victim as Bobby Franks, the son of a Chicago millionaire. And nearby, police found an expensive pair of glasses that they eventually traced to 19-year-old Nathan Leopold. Leopold spent the day with Richard Loeb, a distant cousin of Bobby Franks. The police questioning, both men broke down and confessed to killing Franks. Each one blamed the other one. And Leopold and Loeb, graduate students at the University of Chicago. Now, they were brilliant scholars, no question about that, but they were very pampered by their wealthy families. And they came to believe they were somehow better than everybody else, or what the philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche called supermen. To prove their status, they decided to commit a perfect crime. Picked up Franks in her car, hit him on the head with a chisel, and suffocated him. After throwing his clothes in the brush and pouring acid on his corpse to thwart identification, they notified the Franks that their son had been kidnapped and asked for a $10,000 ransom. Well, before the supermen could get their money, Bobby's body was found, and so were Leopold's glasses. Well, at the trial, Leopold and Loeb were represented by famous American trial lawyer Clarence Darrow. Expected to argue the pair were innocent by reason of insanity, Darrow instead stunned the country with what he made them plead guilty. To avoid a vengeful jury and give sentencing power to a thoughtful judge, Darrow also brought in psychiatric experts to testify to the immaturity and emotionally diseased state of his teenage defendants. Darrow reminded the court it was capable of mercy, unlike his victims. Well, they didn't get the death penalty. They got life plus 99 years. Darrow's closing argument took 12 hours and still referred to in anti-death penalty arguments. The men he'd saved became model prisoners running a school to educate other prisoners. 1936, Loeb was murdered by another inmate. 1958, Leopold was paroled. Moved to Puerto Rico where he worked in a hospital and dreamed of making a great medical breakthrough so he'd be remembered as a hero instead of a killer. Didn't work out that way, though. He died in 1971 without ever having made that monumental discovery. Now, let's talk about the true story behind one of India's best-known unsolved mysteries. Well, the case is referred to as the Stoneman, and it spans two periods and two locations. The first period is from 1985 to 1988 in Bombay, and the second is from June to December 1989 in Calcutta. It was during this time period that 25 people were murdered, 12 in the first three-year span and 13 more over the 6 months in Calcutta. And the method by which the Stoneman took his victims' lives is especially macabre and earned him, or her, easily be a woman, that odd nickname. In all these cases, somebody crept up on a destitute person sleeping outside alone in a street or in an alley and dropped a large stone weighing about 50 pounds on the victim's head, which, of course, crushed the person's skull and killed him instantly. Indian police aren't convinced the two series of murders were carried out by the same person. Instead, they say the Calcutta murders are probably carried out by a copycat. Since 1989, several similar cases have emerged, and authorities are not sure if it's the work of the same person or another copycat who's trying to ride on the notoriety of the Stoneman murders. I mean, these are such perfect crimes, there's never even been a suspect. Well, I've known a lot of crooks in my life. I've represented them, done business with them. Of course, the biggest crooks are the roofing company I'm dealing with now. But sometimes, crooks are just absolutely dumb. A Boise man stole a dog at gunpoint, then tucked his gun into the waistline of the back of his pants and drove off with the dog. Well, the gun began bothering him while he was driving, so he reached back to reposition the gun and shot himself in the ass. Then when he tried to remove the gun from his pants, he shot himself in the butt again. He was hospitalized in serious condition. The dog was returned to its home. Didn't say what happened to the gun. Well, a man who had committed crimes in Morgantown, West Virginia, was curious to know if the police suspected him. So he went up to two officers he saw and asked, were there any warrants out for him? Well, there were. Roger Yost, 40, and William Eisberg, is 40, were arrested in Fairbanks, Alaska when they tried to steal a 500-pound safe from a Moose Lodge hall. They might have gotten away with it had they not arrived at the Moose Hall riding bicycles. How do you carry a 500-pound safe on a bicycle? Carefully. Well, let's talk about Mayor Suskovjansky. He was a mob accountant. He was one of the few people who knew that crime paid because he kept the books. He's born in 1902 in Grodno, Russia. His name was changed to Meyer Lansky when he came to New York with his family as a child. And he was known as a good Jewish boy until he teamed up with Bugsy Siegel to form the Jewish Bugs and Meyer Mob. He was small, physically. He provided the planning and the financial know-how, while Siegel and friends provided the muscle. 1920, Prohibition was the law, so Lansky and Siegel joined forces with their old friend Lucky Luciano, and they made a fortune selling liquor to speakeasies. 1931, Lansky helped Luciano rise to power and create La Cosa Nostra, this thing of ours. La Cosa Nostra grew so powerful, Lansky later described it as bigger than U.S. Steel. Mob was pulling in millions, and the bosses were coming to Lansky for financial advice. Some historians actually believe that Lansky actually ran the mafia through Luciano. But Lansky stayed under law enforcement's radar. After Prohibition ended, Lansky opened illegal gambling casinos in New York, New Orleans, and Florida. They were so profitable that when Lansky wanted to open some offshore casinos in the 1950s, Cuban dictator Fulgencio Batista welcomed him into Havana. Bugsy Siegel's hotel casinos in Vegas had lost so much money that the commission had him killed in 1947. It's said that Lansky himself ordered the execution, but Lansky stayed in power because he made crime pay. Well, even Lansky couldn't win forever. 1959, he lost $7 million in mob money when Fidel Castro overthrew Batista and nationalized all the casinos. 1970s, the feds were after him, so he fled to Israel. 2 years later, the Israeli got tired of him and deported him back to the U.S. When he got back in 1973, he faced income tax evasion charges, but wonder of wonders, he was acquitted. Never spent a day in jail. The FBI claimed he had millions stashed away when he died of lung cancer in 1983. And Forbes magazine believed it as well, listing him among their 400 wealthiest people in America in 1982. If you could figure out where he hid the money. You know, a lot of crooks capitalize on other people's ideas. You know what the world's most counterfeited items are? Louis Vuitton purses. Company estimates only 1% of the Louis Vuitton purses on the market are actually authentic. The rest are counterfeit. And I never gave it much thought until I walked into a local Dillard's and they have classic purses for sale. In other words, they're used purses. But the price is unbelievable. Well, you know, a lot of folks like to be known as masterminds, and sometimes they're good and sometimes they're mediocre. 2001, Sean Myers drove his pickup truck into Lynn's Market in Wellsville, Pennsylvania. Backward. Crashed through the window and tried to steal the ATM by dragging it with a chain attached to the truck. Well, unfortunately for Sean, that didn't work. A few days later, went back and crashed his truck through the plywood that was covering the broken window and tried to steal the ATM again. And again he failed. A few days after that, he drove through the front window of the Rutter's Farm Store. This time he actually made off with the ATM, bouncing along behind his truck till he hit a parked car and broke free. Several months later, Myers returned to Lynn's Market, drove through Lynn's window again, chained up the ATM, and drove off. This time the ATM stayed with him, got away and broke into the machine. And to his shock, discovered there was no money in it. He was arrested and ordered to pay thousands of dollars in restitution and sentenced to 6 years in prison. When asked why he tried to steal ATMs, he said, well, Judge, he needed the money for court costs from previous trials. So it was really the court's fault. Yeah. Two men in Benicia, California did almost everything right. They had their ski mask, their semi-automatic handguns, burst into the bank, ordered everybody to lie down on the floor. Said, put all the money on the counter. Well, that's where things went awry. There was no money. It was a credit union. It didn't use cash. So they ran and nobody caught them. I never heard about such a thing until opening the account at a local credit union. And I wanted to open my account with some cash. I'm sorry, we don't take cash. Huh? They have what they call their live tellers in the back, which are cash machines with video cameras. The tellers are somewhere else in town, and you put the money in the 30 bills at a time, mind you, into the slot in the machine, and then you get credit for the deposits. Never heard of such a thing. Kind of takes the fun out of pointing the gun at the camera and saying, give me your money. They laugh at you and cut off the feed. Well, sometimes headlines tells you all you need to know. One example is a man who crashed through a Slidell Airport gate arrested in underwear after alleged encounter with a snake. Now, that gave you a lot of information, but it also raised a lot of questions. The headline left out one important factor, though. This had to do with voodoo. Suspect was 43-year-old Kevin Bolton of Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And this incident took place in October 2017 in Louisiana. According to reports, Bolton drove his Chevy to the small airport and crashed through one gate and entered through another gate and crashed into a telephone pole, which fell on his truck, which, of course, immobilized it. He fled the scene and was found 2 hours later lying in his underwear in the middle of a nearby road. When asked why he was laying in the road in his underwear, he said, well, he was in town to see a voodoo doctor, but at some point a snake climbed into his pants, and that's what caused the accident. And that's why he took off his pants, and that's why he's laying in the road in his underwear. Well, after a thorough investigation, they spent at least an hour investigating this. Final determination was he may have been under the influence of a narcotic. You think? You know, a German friend, well, as an acquaintance, always spouts proverbs. And the one he said that I found the most interesting, he who holds the ladder is as bad as the thief. Well, sometimes thieves just can't help themselves. Bryce Edward Bennett Jr., 52, of York County, Pennsylvania, appealed a July 2013 conviction for shoplifting. He said there was a lack of evidence in his original case. So the appeals court judge took a look at the evidence. Several supermarket employees saw Bennett with overloaded pockets run out of the store. Two, police officer testified he saw hot dogs flying out of Bennett's pocket as he tried to run away. And three, when the police caught Bennett, there was a pork loin and a shrimp wheel stuffed inside his jacket. Well, as you might guess, the conviction was upheld. In another case, after a Frederick, Maryland tattoo shop was burglarized, the shop owner looked at the surveillance video and saw the burglars had covered their faces. But one of them, his name was Max Goranson, forgot to cover his arms, one of which had a large tattoo on it that had been obtained in the tattoo shop earlier. So it's kind of hard to say I wasn't there. Well, in 2014, police in the Netherlands got a call from a crying drunk man who said he was trapped inside a building. Told him he had broken a window and tried to steal some items and couldn't find his way out. So the police went to the location and freed the man and then locked him up for burglary and theft. Let's talk about the death of Vicky Morgan. She was a model and longtime mistress of Alfred Bloomingdale, one of the wealthiest men in America. He was heir to the Bloomingdale department store fortune and a member of Ronald Reagan's kitchen cabinet. July 7th, 1983, Morgan is found in her apartment beaten to death with a baseball bat. Her roommate, Marvin Pancost, confessed to doing it. Morgan was Bloomingdale's mistress for 12 years. When Bloomingdale contracted terminal throat cancer and was hospitalized, his wife Betsy cut off Morgan's income. Morgan was getting between $10,000 and $18,000 a month from Bloomingdale. In response, Morgan decided to go public, tried to publish her memoirs entitled Alfred's Mistress, and when that attempt didn't work, largely because of White House pressure, she filed a $10 million palimony suit against Bloomingdale in which she revealed all of Bloomingdale's indiscretions. She graphically described him as a drooling sadist with a fondness for bondage and beatings. Also accused him of loose talk about secret and delicate matters such as campaign contributions for Mr. Reagan. Case was thrown out, but the trial was an enormous embarrassment to the Bloomingdales and high-ranking Republicans. Well, there was a few questionable facts about this case. Now, Pancost, who allegedly confessed, had a history of mental illness. He had previously confessed to a number of crimes he hadn't committed, including the Tate-LaBianca murders committed by the Manson family. And Bloomingdale may have used Morgan to gather dirt on top-level Republican officials. Reportedly, Bloomingdale had his Hollywood house wired with state-of-the-art video cameras in every room and hidden behind false walls. Anybody who was important in pre-administration and the administration of Ronald Reagan and who wanted to divertisement called on Alfred, regardless of what his or her fetish might be. Bloomingdale allegedly got it all on tape. And, Morgan's apartment wasn't sealed with the L.A. Police Department until more than 24 hours after the murder. According to author Anne Louise Bardash, people could just walk in and walk out. There were any sex tapes hidden in the condo that could easily have disappeared during that 24 hours. And the night before she was killed, according to her friend, Gordon Basicius, Vicky confided to me she was afraid of being murdered. I have a feeling somebody with knowledge of the Bloomingdale tapes had approached her, possibly through Pancost, with a proposal for blackmail. Well, there's a number of conclusions that make themselves readily available. One, Pancost did kill her. He confessed and was sentenced. Or someone in power had her killed. The videotapes did exist. They'd have been severely damaging to the Reagan administration. And certainly, I don't think Ronald would have ordered her death. Nancy certainly would have. Well, let's talk about another topic. You're doing your thing, just having a good time, and bam, somebody accuses you of a crime you didn't commit. In other words, you've been falsely accused. In this particular case, the accused was Frances Evelyn, 58, a custodian at Brooklyn's Public School 91 in New York City. Now, having spent nearly 20 years on the job, Evelyn was well-respected at work in the neighborhood. 2007, police officers arrived at PS 91, arrested Evelyn, cuffed him, and took him away for questioning. Police commissioner announced that Evelyn was accused of the heinous rape of an 8-year-old student on multiple occasions. And they said they had DNA evidence to prove it. So the police took the unorthodox step of locking him up in Rikers Island Prison with actual murderers and rapists. Well, 3 days later, police finally interviewed the accuser. The accuser. Not the accused. turned out the student was known as a troubled child who had lied about being abused on previous occasions. Worse still, the girl described her attacker as a bald white man, but the police arrested Evelyn, who's black. Well, the charges, of course, were dropped, but the story had already gained worldwide attention. On the bus home, according to Evelyn, a woman was reading the paper with my picture on the cover. Headline said, "The Rapist." After that, he couldn't even walk down the street without people pointing at him or insulting him. He eventually sued the city of New York for $10 million. You know, police sometimes get ahead of themselves. And quite often, they are used to harass innocent citizens. Now, not the majority of them, but there are those that get a little extra income doing that. Let's talk about defense lawyer Philip Robertson. Trying to make a dramatic point in front of the jury at his client's recent robbery trial in Dallas, Texas, pointed the pistol used in the crime at the jury box, causing two jurors to fling their arms in front of their faces, others to gasp. Though Robertson was arguing his client should be sentenced only to probation, the judge, who was horrified by that action in his court, gave him 13 years. Another case I'm familiar with, the attorney was trying to show that his client couldn't possibly have used a gun to kill the victim. And he showed that in order to be able to do it and pull the trigger, the hand had to be contorted in such a way that the gun was almost pointed at the head of the accused. Well, the problem is the attorney, and apparently not the cops either, had not cleared the weapon that was around in the chamber. The attorney shot himself. And the headline, which I found both horrifying and amusing, was "A Good Start." Well, let's talk about what I would refer to as the elephant in the room. Plaintiff in this case was a Polish hunter named Waldemar. The defendant was Jaworowski Jagdriessen, a German travel agency that specializes in African hunting expeditions. It seems Waldemar really wanted to shoot an elephant. Why, I don't know, but he did. 2010, he booked a vacation with Jaworowski Jagdriessen, which sent him to a game preserve in Zimbabwe. It's one of the few countries where it's still legal to hunt elephants. Waldemar was told if he found an elephant's excrement, he'd pick up the animal's trail and he'd shoot it. Well, he found neither excrement nor elephants, nor trail, for that matter. Went home empty-handed. When he complained, the agency gave him a free trip back to Zimbabwe. This time, he shot and killed an elephant. In spite of that, he sued the travel agency for $130,000 because they failed to give him an elephant to kill on the first trip. Well, now in El Paso, that case would have flown. But in this particular case, it was dismissed. And according to the judge, the fact the elephant wasn't encountered during the hunt doesn't testify enough for elephants weren't there. And certainly that is a valid point. Well, sometimes people overreact to violations of their rights. After a neighbor's dog pooped on his lawn, Walter Travis, 68, shot the neighbor several times, did not shoot the dog. Danny Jen stole a garbage truck at gunpoint because the truck's driver kept using his driveway to turn around. Well, if they did that, I'd probably steal the truck too. Kevin French, 45, shot his neighbor in the head with an air rifle because he mowed his lawn too often. Well, since it was a BB gun, the neighbor recovered. You know, Chinese have some interesting customs. Ding Zui, Chinese term for hiring somebody to stand trial and serve time for somebody else. Term translates loosely as substitute criminal. And boy, have we got a bunch of those in this country. Well, there are those that say crime pays, but there are quite a number of examples that it really doesn't. In Savannah, Georgia, a man who wanted to steal guns from the back of a squad car parked near a police station. Well, after he climbed in, he realized he'd made a mistake. The back doors of police cars lock automatically when somebody gets inside. He couldn't get out. Police arrested him a few minutes later. Then in Charles City, Virginia, cornered by police, a drug dealer carrying 12 bags of cocaine ran into a forest to escape. The trees were so thick, he thought certainly the police would lose him. Well, he forgot he was wearing those light-up sneakers that flash when you take a step. Police followed the blinking lights through the forest straight to him. Let's talk about what happened in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. A person walking by a convenience store in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota was stopped by a man asking for a favor. He told the passerby he wanted to rob the store, but he needed a disguise. He gave the person $1 to go inside and buy him a scarf to cover his face. Well, the passerby took the dollar, went into the convenience store, called the police. I guess you could say he made out like a bandit. Well, let's talk about sibling love. There were some twins, Bernick Lee and Breon Alston Curry. Both were 19. In May of 2002, both brothers were being held at the Durham County Jail in North Carolina. Bernick Lee was waiting trial for murder, and Breon was being held on an unrelated robbery charge. On the day that Breon was scheduled for release, the jail's computer crashed. The guards, working from a handwritten list of inmates to be released, went to Bernick Lee's cell and asked if he was Breon. Bernick said yes. His face matched the photo on the release form. I mean, let's face it, they're twins. Why wouldn't it? And he gave the right home address. Well, Bernick spent seven hours on the outside and turned himself back in. Later pled guilty to second-degree murder and sentenced to 9 to 12 years in prison. County officials never could figure out whether Breon played any part in the snafu. According to jail's director, Lieutenant Colonel George Naylor, I don't have any information to believe that. But I don't have any information not to believe it either. Well, if my brother was released and I wasn't, I wouldn't be a happy camper. Of course, at trial, I would argue that I was wrongfully accused. Let's talk about Carrie and David Moore, a pair of 27-year-old twins, serving time in a Nebraska State Penitentiary in October 1984. One afternoon, they met up in a conference room in the prison, switched clothes, and nobody's looking. Afterward, Carrie, posing as David, was released into the prison yard, and David, posing as Carrie, was escorted back to Carrie's cell. Well, the ruse was exposed when Carrie reported for David's kitchen duty. Kitchen supervisor realized that David wasn't David and reported the incident to the guards. Well, when confronted, the twins confessed to the switch, but they wouldn't have kept it up for much longer. David was serving 4 to 6 years for burglary, and Carrie's waiting execution on death row. You got to wonder about folks sometimes. Then we got Tony and Terry Litton, 19. Tony is serving a 2-year sentence for burglary when Terry came to visit him in March of 1990. Somehow, the brothers managed to strip down to their underwear and switch clothes in the middle of a bustling guarded visitor's room. When the visit was up, Terry went back to Tony's cell and Tony walked out the prison with the rest of the visitors. Well, if you're going to do something like that, a word of advice, especially to identical twins. If you're planning to trade places, don't have your names tattooed on the backs of your necks, as these two did. When an inmate noticed that Tony's name now read Terry, he called a guard. Tony was caught 3 days later and returned to jail to serve out his full sentence, no parole this time around, plus the extra time for escape. Terry served some time of his own for helping him. Well, as you can see, there are many strange crimes out there. We're going to talk about more of them over the next few days. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great weekend since today's Friday.